Welcome to the Profitable Steward Podcast with Jared Sorensen. In this series, we'll learn and explore regenerative agriculture principles. Through practices that improve soil health, animal health, and good stewardship, we are working to help you increase your productivity and profitability. Join us in learning from successful farm and ranch experts who share stories of growth from their fields to help your fields grow strong. Here is your host, Jared Sorensen.
Okay, well, welcome everyone. As we usually do, we're going to kick this thing off with a prayer. Les Nunn is going to offer a prayer for us here as we get started.
Our Father in Heaven, as we come together here as various different land owners, managers, and stewards, we ask thee that thy blessings will be with us this afternoon, evening, and that we'll be able to visit about these things that will help us to be better stewards and of the thy creations which thou hast so greatly blessed us with. Father, we're grateful for all thy blessings and pray for these things at this time in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Les. We appreciate that. And welcome, everyone. This is the Profitable Regeneration Podcast. We're pleased today to have Troy Eckert. Troy is the founder of Eckert Enterprises. He is going to be speaking to us today about some off-farm investing opportunities. I was introduced to Troy a little over a year ago. We have a mutual friend, Chris Miles. Chris, he's been on the summit. He's spoken about the importance of cash flow. And when we looked at what we could do to be able to tap into some equity that we had in our land and invest in some income producing opportunities, I said, you know, you really ought to take a hard look at what Eckert is doing. And so our very first investment was about a year and a half ago. And it was called the Cattleman's Project. And that fits, right? I thought the name was good. And then we later also are in another project called the Foundation Project. And you know, as it started out, yeah, I was providing monthly cash flow, and then all of a sudden we get some pretty significant cash flow. And I called up David Day, who was actually the individual who works with Troy, who helped get us into this investment. And I said, hey, wait a minute. I just got a pretty good chunk and deposited into our account. And what does that mean? He says, well, yeah, that's how these things work. And it's kind of what was projected, a little bit better than what was projected. And, you know, that's pretty cool to see. I've met Troy. I've was blessed to be able to attend a conference that he did in Southern California. I like to, before I put somebody out to our audience, I like to get to know them, shake their hand, look them in the eye. And Troy is the real deal. He's a Texan. He's got a big heart, a real willingness to help other people, and that was evident by the individuals who were there at that conference and sung his praises. And so we're really glad to have you here today, Troy. First of all, tell us where you're from, and then we can jump right in.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jared. Thanks again for opening up your relationships, and thanks for taking the time, and everyone for joining on tonight. So my background is I'm almost 60 years old. I grew up in Corpus Christi, Texas, and ended up living in the Rio Grande Valley all during high school. So I was right in the middle of farming country. And as a kid, I used to ride and break quarter horses. I worked at the cattle yard. I stomped cotton, drove tractors, and, you know, little sun damage from driving tractors. I paid the price for being a, you know, dollar an hour worker back in the 1980s. But I was able to move into economics and finance through college and was introduced to the oil and gas industry in 1985. And my job at that time was to introduce high income, high net worth investors to the opportunity to directly own oil and gas assets across the U.S. And that involved things like drilling wells, buying minerals, pipeline, saltwater disposal wells, anything directly related to fossil fuels. And so for the last 37 years, since 1985, I've involved myself representing individuals who would like to be in the alternative space, owning tangible assets like I just described. So that's what I've been doing since 1985. And I have a company called Eckerd Enterprises, which is staffed with about 45 people here that manage our clients' money and assets.
That's great. Well, it's a good business model. I can tell by the people who worked with you as well, that they're passionate about it. They're knowledgeable, they're experts in their field. And the neat thing about it is with your model, it doesn't seem highly speculative. It seems like there's a lot of assurance that you have because you paid the price to become an expert yourself, but also, you know, the market, you know, where it is, and there's downside protection. So for a lot of those reasons, that's why I felt like, man, this is a good investment. This is an opportunity that may fit farmers and ranchers, who a lot of times, you know, we're asset rich, but we're cash poor.
Yeah.
You know, we have a huge amount tied up in assets. And so, we struggle sometimes to, you know, pay for groceries and make mortgage payments and some of those day-to-day necessities. So that's why I wanted to invite you here. So let's jump right in and just kind of give us a background of what the industry is and how somebody would get started. And sure. Then we can take some questions and I might interject some questions and comments also.
Perfect. So the first thing is just understanding what we do. Looking at Jared's background screen, couldn't be a better photograph. During the land grant days, everyone who got assigned or acquired real estate received three rights. You got the surface rights, which it came with everything attached to the surface, your farm, your ranch, your property, your commercial building, doesn't matter if you're in the city or in rural areas. You also got your air rights, which are above the particular property that you own, but not attached to the surface. And then you have natural resource or mineral rights, everything below the surface, not including water. And so what happened over the last couple of hundred years is that all of a sudden, landowners recognized that they had three assets they could monetize, use, lease, or sell. And this started becoming more of a marketable asset the last 20 or 30 years because everyone started to begin to realize, hey, that through selling versus leasing my minerals, maybe that's a large chunk of change today versus a lease agreement based on speculation that maybe an oil well being drilled could make me money. Basically, mining of resources might result in some kind of royalty payment. And as the technology for mining and exploration in oil and gas became more and more prevalent with much higher success, much lower risk, it really allowed the overall U.S. mineral market to become a powerhouse, probably $1 trillion-plus industry, because now you had, as landowners, something you could use as a tool in your financial war chest. And so over the last 10 or 12 years, as drilling, horizontal drilling, frack stimulation, completing these hard shale wells at 2 miles below the surface. Now, instead of having maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 million acres in the United States that had oil and gas under it, you now have 400 or 500 million acres of oil and gas minerals across the U.S. in 9 large oil basins. So my ability since 1985 was to be on the driller side, leasing minerals from somebody like Jared. And so he owned them, I leased them, I drilled the well, took the risk. And if I hit a well, he made some money, could make a lot of money. If I drilled a dry hole, it could actually devalue his minerals because it was condemned. That's not the case anymore. Now we have the ability to own minerals underneath existing wells that are already de-risked. It has a tremendous amount of growth opportunity because of how much oil and gas is in place. And by technology, just like with your farming and your ranching, technology has now allowed these oil companies to drill these wells successfully with about a 98% to 99% success rate. Really, the only dry holes are because there's a mechanical failure. Mother Nature can give you a little bit of a twist once in a while. So for me, I'm always the guy that is looking for the arbitrage. You know, my father-in-law took me hunting very beginning when I was dating his daughter. We've married 37 years. And he said, hey, look, sit in a deer blind. I want you to look for a 10-point buck. It's got to be 175 pounds or bigger. Don't shoot anything less than that. I'll pick you up at 9 o'clock. He comes back at 9 o'clock and he says, so what'd you see? I said, 25 deers that met your description. I thought this was a trick because I was on a great lease next to a big ranch. I said, but while I was looking at those deer, I redesigned your entire deer blind because it was set up wrong. The door swings the wrong way, the wrong hinges, nothing works. So I created this entire redesign of your deer blind. And I come up with this Eckerd's hunting pack of what you need to give somebody who's never hunted before. And he looked at me and said, you are one weird young man. I said, I'm not weird. I just see things differently than you do. And that's how I look at investing. Investing is about recognizing the value and how to take advantage of that in a way that is productive to both the buyer and seller, so it's a win-win relationship. So now I use technology to find landowners who want to monetize some of their assets by selling their mineral rights. And that's what we do as a company. We buy them, we take all the risk, and once we package them into a portfolio, we invite investors like Jared to participate for some of what we bought. We then manage them for free. Checks come out every month. These wells will last 25 to 75 years. Our tenants, because we're the landowner, are major billion-dollar oil companies like Exxon, Chevron, Oxy. So we've got top-tier tenants, cash every month, no risk, no liability, and we get checks every single month for the next 25 to 75 years. Sounds too good to be true, but it wasn't true 5 to 7 years ago because this market was not available. Jared, I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, that's a great background. So when you say the market wasn't available, meaning the technology wasn't there to be able to tap into some of the oil that was there but not accessible?
Well, so the oil and gas we're extracting today that has taken the United States from almost being out of oil and gas in 2008 to now we're the number one producer of oil in the world, above even Saudi, was we had these big, thick shale formations like wet concrete. We always knew they were there. We always knew they had tremendous concentration of hydrocarbons, dead plants and animals that have been cooking for millions of years. But if you ever try to get a drink of water out of licking wet concrete, you know it's not going to happen. So we drilled through these zones. We knew where they were. They were clearly defined, but no one could figure out how do you get these molecules to flow. So a guy named George Mitchell from 1985 to 1997 was considered to be a kook by all oil and gas experts, saying this idiot is trying to complete wells in wet shale like concrete. It's never going to happen. But smart George said, what if I drilled down with a 7.5-inch vertical well and I go sideways? And the reason why it didn't exist, Jared, because in the old days, I had to rely on that 7-inch well going down a mile or two, hitting a buried riverbed or some geological formation with about a 60% chance of success and 40% chance of being a dry hole. And if any minerals were available, the only person who knew where the minerals were was the geologist, the geophysicist, and the oil company. So guys like you and I could never buy those minerals. And if we did, and they drilled a dry hole, our minerals became worthless. So it's high risk. But because of this technique of drilling down and going horizontal, what George Mitchell did was he proved that if I can take a 7.5-inch wellbore and I can turn it sideways and expose the wellbore to a significant more reservoir, maybe I can multiply the recovery by 10x, 20x, 30x. He did that, and he got a better result. Not good enough. So he thought to himself, look, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, how would I get wet concrete to flow better? Nothing's connected because none of it has pore space of permeability. What if I took a jackhammer and I jackhammered down the middle of that concrete driveway? Now the water will pond to the point of least resistance along that fracture. Oh, that's what I've got to do. I got to drill horizontally, then I got to inject sand and water, crack the rock, put sand in those fractures so it stays open, and that was the solution. Long horizontal wellbores, fracture the rock, the pressure of the earth sitting on top of it like squeezing a sponge, push the oil and gas molecules out, and what was considered to be non-economical, not even commercial oil and gas reserves in 2008 and 9, is now absolutely the largest oil and gas discoveries in the United States and rivals, the Permian Basin in West Texas, rivals Saudi Arabia in terms of reserves. This was all non-economical 13, 14 years ago. So now you've got millions and millions of acres of people like yourself, Jared, looking at that big pasture behind you in that screen that thought, I don't have any oil and gas. I've got cattle, I've got land, and I've got some air rights, but nothing underneath me. All of a sudden you discover that, hey, I can drill a well a mile from you, go down 2 miles, go horizontal. Now you're part of this mineral unit, and now you're going to get a check every month for the rest of your life. That allowed landowners to monetize their assets, create that cash flow you don't have now every single month, which allows you to balance your farming and ranching. And yet what you've really been able to do is create incredible cash flow, passive income, while maintaining your surface rights, your family ranch, your family farm. That's what happened.
Cool. So talk a little bit about the basins that you're drilling in and why and what the reserves are based on current technology.
Yeah. So my career has been around a long time. I've probably drilled in at least 5 of the 9 basins, and there's multiple components of each basin that you have to consider. First and foremost, regulatory. I want to be in a state that's fossil fuel friendly, because if I go into a state that's not fossil fuel friendly, it adds a whole layer of risk that I'm not willing to take. I can't change the mind of an elected official every 2 to 4 years. So you eliminate certain basins based on geography of which state they're in, based on blue or red. The second thing you do is you have to look at the state regulations on how individual participation in wells works. Some states are super friendly to the small investor. Some don't give you that much in the way of being able to be equal. So I always liked the North Dakota Bakken, right? I always liked the Oklahoma Anadarko, and I like the Texas Permian Basin. The third thing I'm always factoring in is economics to my tenant, which is the oil company. Which basin is closest to the refineries, the Gulf of Mexico, pipelines, infrastructure? Well, North Dakota's got unbelievable oil, but it's a long way from the Gulf of Mexico. So as I go through my analysis, I've looked at and we've reviewed, I believe we've reviewed all 9 basins to date, meaning we tore them apart from top to bottom. We looked at everything from oil companies as our tenants, reserves, formations, close proximity. And our conclusion was the most favorable economic basin was the Oklahoma Anadarko Basin, which we've been in since 2018. We also really like the Permian Basin in West Texas. But that's the difference between being in a normal neighborhood in Highland Park. I can buy 5 acres in Oklahoma for every acre I can buy in the Permian Basin. They're probably quantitatively close in value. It's just mentally, I can get a much better return on cash today for Oklahoma than I can from Texas. But that's our 2 main basins we're in today.
Cool. Yeah, and I know one of the questions that I had and maybe other people had are oil and gas gets kind of a bad rap. It's dirty. You know, it's something that's going to be replaced by solar. We're going to all be forced to drive EVs or choose to drive electric vehicles at some point. From what I understand, oil and gas is not going away anytime soon. But talk a little bit about the environmental side of it. Somebody just in a podcast that I listened to the other day with somebody from Robert Kiyosaki's team, they're interviewing a gal from Alaska, and she's over the oil and gas industry. And she said that they're one of the most highly regulated industries in the world. They have to keep it clean, otherwise they'll get shut down. But speak to that a little bit, especially as, you know, as we consider ourselves stewards of the land and wanting to and do right, not only for ourselves economically now, but long-term for generations to come.
Well, a couple of things. Let's just talk about, you and I talked about it out in California when you came to our conference, and I'm always sarcastic about the answer just because I'm kind of a jokester by nature. That's probably why I got suspended more times in high school than I can count. But the reality of it is that we've all been given a false sense of this changeover to green energy. If anybody breathing air doesn't believe that improper management of resources will end up to destruction, well, you're not really thinking beyond your own self-greed. So whether you're building houses, timber, land, water, cattle, oil and gas, it's always about what's fundamentally the best for the society and for the planet, right? But what the oil and gas industry's had to do is they've had to be put up on top of this pillar where the entire world is blaming fossil fuel for this climate change, which I don't believe is really here from my standpoint. But that last 14 years of climate environmental concern and paranoia has pushed really oil and gas to the brink of limitation on supply. The reciprocal side of that is, I don't even know what the number is these days, but it's probably pushing $10+ trillion have been invested in alternative energy sources, wind and solar and hydrogen and everything else. And the reality is you can pretend that you can manipulate a free market, but the free market is the free market. If 5 farmers are selling watermelons and the last guy says, I'm selling organic watermelons, but it's twice the price, I'll buy 2 watermelons and take a vitamin, but I don't care about the organic watermelon if I got to eat and put food on my table, right? And I don't mean that facetiously. I'm just saying it's human beings are going to do what's best for them. Well, the facade has played out and really come to crash in the last 18 months. Because why? Now, even the major oil companies who said, we're going to be carbon neutral, we're going to create EV cars at Ford, we're going to do all these things to comply, none of them are being accepted. None of them are proving out to be true or valid. And so what you've had is this complete reversal in the last 18 months where all this climate pressure is disappearing. And let me tell you the reason why it makes sense. Every oil company has had to take a front and center approach to being environmentally careful because they're the trendsetters for how do we drill wells more efficiently? How do we avoid chemicals? How do we protect the fresh water? How do we make sure the land looks exactly like it did when we arrived? And how do we transport as safely as possible? So there's no slack. They are the most targeted defendants in every plaintiff's lawsuit. So because of that, we have cleaned up the industry the last 20 years by necessity because we're being targeted. But at the end of the day, you and I as mineral owners, we are actually below the surface, not exposed to that, but we sure want the people operating our wells, or at least the minerals we buy under, to be good stewards of the surface. Today, I think you're going to find that oil and gas is not only not shrinking, but the amount of oil and gas used today will be actually higher in 2050, not lower. The new energy consumption may be somewhat replaced by solar, wind, hydrogen, nuclear, but at the end of the day, everything on our screens is made from a barrel of oil, and there's no way around it. Every human being, including the homeless guy in town, uses oil and gas every day with the clothes he wears, the sign he holds up, and the marker he puts, "Will work for food," and that kind of stuff on the sign. So this is about an agenda that failed, and now it's coming crashing. Now, I will add this, Jared, that makes a lot of sense, though. Because of that push, in fact, the environmentalists have caused oil and gas to go a higher price. They took all the capital and sent it over here to this green energy, the wind, solar, nuclear, and hydrogen, and it deprived the oil and gas industry of the capital it needed. So now oil prices are going higher because we don't have enough supply. And the reality is, in my view, the left, the liberal left, wants oil and gas to be $125 to $150 a barrel because that's the price it takes to make wind and solar economically viable without subsidies. So the only way we change consumers' mindset is if we make everything equal, now they'll make a choice. Well, if I had everything equal, it was the same quantity, same access, same reliability, yeah, I'll take the cleaner energy. I'll take natural gas or wind or solar. But until it gets to $150 a barrel, that's not true. So today, everyone's heating their homes, running their cars on what's most cost effective because they're no longer buying into this fake green energy fraud on the climate side. And that's kind of the whole thing wrapped up into 1 3-minute spiel.
That's good. Yeah, I appreciate you going there. And certainly, you know, there's a lot of propaganda out there. So it's good to be able to hear it directly from somebody that's in the industry. Granted, you know, we are biased from our standpoint, but I think that, you are scrutinized and you've got to show that you do run a clean ship. One of the things that I liked a lot was the model that you showed at that conference of the actual footprint.
Yeah,
in the Anadarko Basin, where you're drilling on, is it a section of land, 640 acres?
Well, all these horizontals, if it's a short leg, 1 mile laterals on 640, they decide to make it like a rectangle, two 640 acre sections, you know, so they can go longer. It's only like a 3-acre pad site. So to me, it's actually substantially less of an intrusive footprint because now I can drill on one pad site. I can drill out horizontally 2 miles. Whereas if you look at West Texas, where they had to drill them on 5-acre spacing, it looks like a pincushion, right? They destroyed it. Now, because of the horizontal drilling, we can actually take one pad site. We put as many as 24 wellheads on a single pad site, come out and make a curve, and we can go horizontally in multiple zones like a stacked building, but it's only on a 3 or 4 acre pad site. To me, it is about the most environmentally sensitive, most cautiously developed mineral rights that I've seen in my career based on what I see today. I mean, some of these locations are as clean as you've ever seen, no oil in the ground, and you got 5, 10, 15 wells because why? They're able to drill them 4 miles apart, right? 2 miles this way, 2 miles this way. I got 4 miles of zero wells. That is incredibly efficient when it comes to protecting the environment and also containing the liability, oil leaks, or anything else. It's on a single 3-acre pad site.
Yeah, that was pretty neat to actually see a picture of that and get an idea and look forward to the time when we can go on a tour and actually see it in real life.
Yeah.
So let's switch gears here a little bit. Let's talk about the economics. You know, how are you able to provide the returns that you do for your investors and maybe share a little bit about that side of it?
Yeah, so in my view, there's two values for minerals. One is what a petroleum engineer, a reservoir engineer might determine to be the value, and then there's what I call market value. So a reservoir engineer, petroleum engineer is going to take a look at what's called the given. You got a well, it's producing this much oil. At today's prices, today's cost, that well is going to last 15 years. I want to make 10% of my money, so I'm going to discount today's value based on that 10% return. I'm going to give you $9,000 per mineral acre based on what I just calculated. Then that's just what I call empirical bankable value, right? Then there's market value. And the market value is we're going to do the same $9,000 value as the engineer. We've got two engineers on staff. We'll do the same $9,000 in value. But what the market says is, well, that came from two wells that were drilled. But this reservoir is so thick and so saturated, you're going to have to drill 4 to 6 more wells. And you don't have one zone, but you have 3 zones. So the market recognizes that you have maybe 6 to 12 times more reserve potential than the two wells that are producing. So market value might be $14,000 per acre. Now, I'll give you an example that happened 3 years ago during COVID. We have what we call never sellers. I call up a farmer, rancher, my team does, and says, hey, you own 300 acres. We'd like to buy some minerals. We're a never seller. We don't sell. My grandfather left it to me. We don't have to sell it. There's no holding cost. We're not going to sell. Okay, no problem. But if you ever change your mind, let us know. Okay, no problem. Probably 80% or more are never sellers. They just won't sell their minerals. We get a call back from that same guy in this example about, I don't know, 9 months later. He said, look, you guys contacted me. I've checked you out. You have a stellar reputation. My mother's going to a nursing home. I don't want to put her in just an average nursing home. I want her in a nursing home my dad would appreciate. My son is a geologist. He's mad I'm selling minerals, but it's $250,000. I'd like to sell 40 acres of my 300 acres. And I think the value was like $12,000 an acre. So we closed in 7 days. We already knew the title. And we bought those mineral acres because he needed the money in the bank to take care of his mom. What we also knew is that there was probably going to be another 4 to 8 wells drilled on that property. And we knew that the calculation economically would generate a 10 to 18% cash on cash return to our investors. So what Eckerd does is we play matchmaker. We play matchmaker between the seller and what they want and what we need in order to make a financial model work for me and investors like yourself. Our number one premise with Eckerd is we don't take speculation. We want to buy only proven minerals that have producing wells at the time of acquisition. We want cash flow from day one. We only want minerals that has growth and upside. We don't want to buy a single orange tree. We want to buy a grove. We want to know this thing's going to have multiple zones, multiple oil wells, multiple gas wells that will be developed over time. So we want to have those two ingredients. We must make 10% cash on cash return to the investor level or higher because it is an alternative asset, higher risk because it's less liquidity, right? So that's kind of our minimum premise on economics. And we want to do this all in 5 years or less, only from the standpoint everyone likes to look at what's going to happen in 3 to 5 years. Now, farmers and ranchers are much easier to work with because you're looking at seasons and times and trends. So it automatically inherently falls in the same kind of risk profile. You look at what you do for a living. All those things considered, we then buy the minerals to fit our model. So if the seller just insists on 14,000 acres, we say, we love you. You've got great minerals. They're going to be great. We're not a buyer. We're a buyer at 11,000 an acre because Troy's got to buy it for 11 and maybe sell it to you for 12. Because I got to make a living and pay for this team. So traditionally, other than a really, really big package like Foundation that was whatever, $130 million, I will go out with my money, buy all those mineral tracts all over Oklahoma. We'll bundle them into a portfolio. I've already paid for them. I've taken the risk. So I'm 100% at risk. If no one else buys them, they're mine. So I'm buying the very best. And then what I do is look at my cash flow and say, in this $10 million portfolio, I'll keep 15%. I'll keep $1.5 million for myself. My partners will buy the other 85%. It helps me pay for my cost. It lets me buy my minerals at a lower price. And my whole goal is to just keep accumulating minerals for my family and for my own trust. So it's a great, great relationship. I'm like a great French baker. I make great croissants, but I'm not going to eat them all. I got to make them, sell some in order to feed my family. And of course, I eat my own croissants.
Yeah, makes sense. So kind of walk through if somebody says, yeah, I'm interested in the passive income side, which truly this is, right? It is passive income. You're not calling me up to say, hey, we need to make this decision or something's happening on the ground. We need your input. Like I've never been called. I've never had a capital call, which if you're not familiar with that, I had my first one yesterday on a multifamily.
Yeah.
And I threw some capital at it and holy cow, I got to put some more in. It's a long story, but that's not going to happen with you, right?
The reality is when you own minerals and the oil company leases your minerals, in that agreement, that lease document, it says, we agree to assume all liability, not only in capital, environmental, plugging, drilling costs, blowouts. You, the mineral owner, are completely 100% free of any future cost. We, the lessee, have to go drill a well within 3 years or typically 3-year terms to earn the right of continual development, to continue harvesting of your oil and gas minerals. We retain about an average of 18.75%, a 3/16 lease. We retain that as what's called a royalty payment. And that means for every dollar generated off the sale of oil and gas from the minerals that we own and that the oil company leased, we get $18.75 on that $100. I'll use a $100 example. For every $100, we get $18.75. Mm-hmm. So what happens is there is no cash call because we have no liability. We're not exposed. It's 12 distributions a year and a 1099 because it's just ordinary income. Now, what's so good about that is when other people talk to me about passive investments, hey, buying this partnership for this apartment, buying this partnership for self-storage, buying this partnership for this feedlot, it's not a partnership because you just got a cash call. I look at this as the highest and most successful definition of a passive asset from income. I never have written a check in 37 years on any mineral I own. It's above bankruptcy. It's above lawsuits. It's above environmental. It's above everything. We get our check first because when Exxon receives that check for the oil and gas sold that month from Valero, whoever buys the oil and gas, they take that check and they say, look, the first 18.75%, we're fiduciarily responsible for distributing it, but it's not our money. It goes into our royalty account. We then take the remaining interest to pay all of our bills and liability. But you and I as mineral owners, we get our check first. We're top of the food chain and there's never an invoice, never a bill. And then what Ecker did, Jared, on top of that is we said, look, we got to distribute the check anyway. Part of our service, part of our business is we'll manage it. We have our application, get onto Eckerd Insights, but we'll manage it. I've got to run the revenue anyway. So part of our cost of business is we'll send out all the checks for free. Why? It's a green envelope. It's an ACH to your account. And we give you a statement. We upload that to our online app and everybody gets a check 3 times a month because you get some checks on the 10th, some checks on the 20th. Our big revenue runs on the 25th. So because of that, really, other than getting your 12 checks and a 1099, you and I would never have to talk to each other for the next 10 years. You said, I'm done. I've invested in Tutor. I never want to do it again. You never have to talk to me. I never have to talk to you because, quite frankly, it's just cash flow for the next 25 to 75 years. That is what most investors are looking for. How do I put money to work without any exposure? That's what's so important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really neat model. Talk a little bit about the risk involved, especially, you know, volatile oil prices, things like that. How does that affect me as a mineral right owner?
So think about cattle prices. You know, you got cattle, you got a base cost for the animal you bought. There's a growth rate in that cow as far as cow, calves, whatever you have. You got feed costs, fertilizer costs, land costs, tax. And you say, okay, at some point in value for that cattle price, I'm either in the money or I'm not in the money, right? In our case, the oil and gas industry is established at about $40 a barrel is break even for most big oil companies. And that price does come down a little bit as they get more efficient. So we know between paying the mineral owners, paying the cost, drilling the well, insurance, et cetera, we need about $40 a barrel. Everything above $40 a barrel is profit. Now, here's the fun part. We get our money at $0 a barrel. They made $2 a barrel. We get 18.75% of $2 a barrel. So we don't care about cost. We don't care about the expenses. We don't care about the price other than it does shrink the amount of money we get for 18.75% if it's lower commodity prices, right? We also care because we don't want our tenants to go broke. I don't want my oil companies not to make money. So the way we model our financial model of Eckerd is we use $70 a barrel and $3.50 for natural gas. What we like is the fact that by using really conservative commodity prices, we're not using commodity prices to hope and pray it works out. I bet you in the apartment deal, you're getting a cash call and they're expecting to have a refinancing at a lower interest rate and et cetera, et cetera. So they tried to bet your money on something they didn't control. I don't control commodity price. What we bet is that we're really good at picking the right minerals. We have a really tough financial model. We buy under companies that have a history of how they develop and mature those minerals. So what we use is 37 years of expertise to predict, in our view, who's going to drill, how many wells, when to put them online, and then we do a complete petroleum engineering reservoir analysis, say how big a wells will come in, what they'll produce, and here's what our model says, and so far, we're way above what our financial model predicted. We're significantly above any of our projections as a result. In your cattleman, as example, I think we were looking for 7 or 8% first year, I think 14% second year. We're already at almost 36, 37% in less than 2 years. So not only did we beat the model, we crushed it by almost double. because the oil company that we thought would not drill for 9 months moved in 2 weeks after we bought it and drilled six wells and said, you win the lottery. Here's your money. So we like the fact that oil prices are not the number one factor in success in minnows. What the number one factor is activation. I don't want to go buy a minnow track that's on the edge of the play. There's no pipelines. It's way away from the center. And that oil company has to decide, well, if I drill a well, how do I get the gas and water, dispose it? We buy what I call the tenderloin. We buy right in the gut of the play, tier one assets, because we're surrounded by infrastructure, electricity, roads, water disposal. And we know those oil companies who are also looking at it from the standpoint of highest return are saying, why do we want to go over here 25 miles away when we've got another 5, 10, 20 wells to drill right here? We can have them hooked up tomorrow. We're instantly making money within 45 days of drilling them. And that combination of knowledge, my knowledge for 40 years, knowing what the oil companies are going to do combined with how to buy based on geology, puts us in the driver's seat of having the fastest, lowest risk, fastest to pay, lowest risk minerals of anybody's portfolio in the country, in my belief. We're at $650 million of minerals bought. We're generating about 16, 17% cash on cash returns, zero dry holes and 5,000 wells. We're really good at what we do. I put this team against anybody in the country on buying minerals at this point.
Yeah. So is that a typical 16%? Is that kind of what somebody could bank on?
Higher. So what happens is that we started with small, you know, one brick at a time, and now we buy bigger portfolios. So when you look at our portfolio, we take every portfolio for the last 4 years. And what happens is as we buy more and more mineral acres, the denominator gets bigger. We have probably a third to over 50% of our minerals have not come into pay yet. We haven't got a check yet. We just bought them. So our bottom line denominator is getting bigger, but we still use that to divide into what our cash flow is. So it shows, I think, 16% cash on cash this month. But if you had invested in 2020, let's say, and you stopped in 2022 at the beginning, you're probably well over 32% cash on cash return, 32%. Our fastest portfolio paid out in 31 months. I think we have four or five more that are going to pay out, I think, the month of November. And these are coming in. We weren't looking for payout. We were looking for 10 to 11% return. They're paying out 100% in 3 to 3.5 years, which is off the chart. But that's because we're so picky on our buy box, what we'll buy and what we'll own. That's the number one thing. It's buying the right asset. It's geography, location, location, and at the right terms. That's what makes the difference.
Yeah, makes sense. So is there a minimum investment that a person has to have to be able to invest with you?
Well, so here's how I answer minimums. The answer is yes, it's $25,000 per portfolio. But here's the thing. It'd be like asking a rancher, well, how many cows, what's the minimum number of cows you have to buy to be considered a rancher? Well, two, a bull and a cow. Okay. Well, you're not going to get very far with a bull and a cow. Yeah, but I'm a rancher now because I've got animals, right? The answer is you need to have a portfolio. You need to have a herd. So in my case, I'll look at the partner that says, hey, I'd like to start buying or investing in minerals with. Great. What are you trying to get accomplished? Are you more interested in short-term, high-income minerals that are going to generate cash as fast as you can? Or you want this more long-term cash flow because you can buy them at a lower price per acre? Because obviously, the ones that are loaded with income and new wells are going to cost more because they're more de-risked. So we look at the investor, try to figure out what you're trying to accomplish. Is it a 1031 exchange? Is it in your self-directed IRA? Is it out of your investment account? What's your goal? Let's just use an example. So I say, okay, Troy, I want to put in $500,000 in the next 12 months. I'm more interested in front-loaded cash. I want to rotate my money as quick as I can, not just for the cash flow so I can redeploy and buy more minerals. I want to build a portfolio 5 years. Okay, great. Then what I would do is I take $25,000 on, let's say, 10 to 15 portfolios. Let us pick the ones that are higher cash flow. This one's a little more growth. Maybe don't do this one. Or maybe put 50 in the high income and 25 in the growth. That way you're balancing that growth and income. But we want to help you build that portfolio. We've got some partners that are hard-headed. We had a guy call in 2 weeks ago and says, I need $6 million for 1031. I'm putting all in the next project. I go, you might want to split it. He goes, I can't. I'm at my 43rd day. I got to put it in today. So we do have some investors that adhere to that $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 per portfolio. We got some that are in 20, 30, 50 portfolios. They do incredibly well because now they own 50 wells in this portfolio, 50 wells in this portfolio. They got different oil companies. So there's constant activation and there's a resurgence of activity, which means their cash flow just keeps building and building. It's just really a personal issue, but $25,000 is the minimum. But our average client right now after 5 years is around $450,000 per partner over 36 months. So it's not huge, but it's a reasonable dollar amount.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Talk a little bit about what the exit strategy is. If if a guy gets into it and just says, hey, this, we need the capital for something else.
Yep.
What options are there?
Well, that's the cool part. So up until about 6 months ago, the answer was you contact us. I need to sell. We throw it out there to our 1,500 partners and everybody starts making an offer. Antiquated, but it was the only solution. If nobody made an offer, then there's outside third-party sources. There's dozens and dozens of ways to sell your minerals, right? We decided to spend the money and the capital to kind of complete our offer of being a partner with Eckerd, which is on our app. We now have created what we call our peer-to-peer model. You sign up to the app. You become a partner. A year from now, hey, look, I need $500,000 to buy some cattle or buy some more property. You can now go on our app, list that I want to sell 500,000 of the cattlemen. You post it. It drags all the empirical data, the production, the revenue, the deeds. It drags it with it. Now you have 1,500 to 2,000 alligators saying, we want more. We like what we have. And let's say you had 500,000 as your base cost. You've already made 25% return, but you say, these are great wells, a lot more upside. I'm going to ask $750,000 for it. Now everybody can bid and buy. There's a buy now price. They can bid it up, but you're in control. We charge no fee for that. So the reason I built it is we've had partners that have passed away, car wrecks, cancer, divorces. And I just felt like it's worth my investment to give us all that liquidity component if and when you need to sell, because we all have different opinions about what's going to happen in the market. And we all have personal financial constraints that require us to do things that we don't otherwise want to do, but we want to be able to if we need to. And that's why we created peer-to-peer. I think Ryan's launching it next week or the week after, Jared. We talked about it in California, but I think he's ready to launch that initial peer-to-peer as early as next week.
Mm-hmm. So would it be safe to say, like, your original investment, you can recoup that pretty easily? I mean, it's not,
is it going? That's a market question. It's like the cows behind you on your screen. Pay yeah. 800 a head. Can I get 600 or can I get 1200? So here's what I would tell you. Troy Eckerd, personally, I have no intention on selling my minerals unless I can get two times what I pay for it. And I'll tell you why. I can get two times what I paid for just from revenue. You can't buy these tier one minerals ever again. It's literally like a disappearing asset class because 80% are never sellers. The 60,000 acres we own, I guarantee is 95% of us will never sell. So you're having this limited nine basins in the country quickly being absorbed, probably take another 10 years to absorb it. But once they're gone, they're in somebody's portfolio. They'll never leave Troy Eckerd's portfolio. So it's dissipating. So the only way I would sell is if the market got so frothy, $150 a barrel, gas is at $9, and some idiot says, hey, Troy, you and your partners have $1 billion worth of minerals paid for. You're generating 20%, $200 million a year. We want to buy it for the California Teachers Retirement Fund pension. We'll give you guys a 6 cap rate. I run the math backwards. So you'll pay me $3.2 billion for our $1 billion. We'll sell you a third of that. Give us our billion. We'll keep $2.2 billion. We'll redeploy the billion in a 1031 back out and buy more. And we'll do that every 3 years. I'm okay with that. But just to sell it, where am I going to go? Where am I going to find a zero holding cost asset that gives me cash every single month with tremendous upside? I honestly, I'm selling traditional real estate, buying more minerals. I'm like, I don't want to pay property tax. I'm tired of tenants. I don't want to hear about your problem. I just want to buy minerals. I want 5,000 employees, oil wells in Oklahoma making me money every day. And I don't want to hear anything about a pay raise. Just keep pumping. Just keep going.
Cool. Yeah, probably the last question I have, and then we'll open it up for questions from the audience. If you guys want to just either type them in the chat or unmute if you've got questions for Troy. Tax advantages. With investing with you, how is that income? Is it taxed as ordinary income? What are the tax advantages to oil and gas on the mineral side?
Well, so the IRS treats, it's classified as real estate. So it's just like owning that ranch or farm. Mineral rights are real estate. So from the standpoint of deduction, there is none because you always own it. It's worth something. You can always, take it as a loss or gain depending on when you sell it as a capital gains, capital loss. But because it's real estate, you treat it that way. And so you're going to get cash flow and you're going to get a 1099. But if you buy it directly, not inside of an IRA, you'll get 15% of your income will be tax-free. They basically say you're depleting the reservoir, like depreciating equipment, 15% of your income you won't pay taxes on. The only true tax deduction on gas is you jump the fence and now you participate in the drilling of the well. Now you're active participant in drilling. The cost of drilling, the diesel, the fuel, the equipment, that's all deductible the first year you make the investment. And that's about an 80 to 85% first year deduction. I put $1 million in drilling. I'm going to get $850,000 of reduced taxable income off my federal taxes. And Troy likes those tax deductions, but don't get caught up in tax deductions. It should be called a tax deferral because I plan on making money from that wealth. And a lot of people will try to sell you on a tax deduction. That means you're going to lose my money. I can walk out in that parking lot, set it on fire and lose it myself. I don't need you to lose it. So we're using drilling to own a bigger chunk of the well. Remember, we own 18.75. The other side owns the other 82%. I want to get on this side to get that big tax write-off the first year, 8 or 9 months after it comes online. Now I'm getting big fat checks from the wells that have been produced because we're not seeing any dry holes. They're just really big wells. And I hope that that cash flow combined with next year's income allows me to buy a bigger chunk of wells. So I've been doing this for 37 years. Now, every month I get this enormous amount of revenue coming in. I use that to drill wells in Texas, Oklahoma, North Dakota. I just keep building my reserves, building my cash flow, and pushing my tax bill further down the road because I only own taxes on anything left after my deduction. So this has been a lot of fun. You create a lot of wealth. I buy minerals because I want something I don't have any headache or bills on. I buy work and interest in drill because I want tax write-offs and I want a bigger chunk of the pie. I can always stop drilling, but these over here have zero cash required. I can be 90 years old, cashing my check with zero capital calls. That's pretty exciting to me as somebody about to reach 60.
Yeah, right on. Well, that's great. That is a great overview of the industry. Again, I think this is something that if I guess, who is this for? I would say individuals who truly want a passive income, meaning that it's going to produce whether you get out of bed or not, whether you're disabled or not, whether you're even here or not, if you're set it up right. I mean, it's something that you can pass on for generations.
It's the easiest asset you could transfer to your kids. I buy every month in my personal portfolio strictly to build money. I got 8 grandkids. So every month I'll spend $100,000 or more on each mineral package you're in. And I buy it from the company because what I want to do is create this long, deep pocket of minerals for my estate and my grandkids. They can't mess it up. They can't make any decisions. Unless they sell it or they're crackheads, all they can do is take the check, put it in the bank, and invest it prudently. So for me, it's the easiest asset I can transfer. And I think what's really important about it is that when I die, the IRS is going to value my minerals at that discounted petroleum engineer's value because that's what the IRS does. The other big advantage you have is that if you invest inside of your IRA and you want to go from a traditional IRA and convert it to a Roth, there's 4 or 5 appraisers that work with us. They'll appraise it at that petroleum engineer IRS value, and you might get as much as a 50 to 60% discount, which means now as I convert to my Roth, I just got a huge tax break by not paying taxes at the market value, but at the what I call the physical or the economic value. A lot of our clients have saved millions of dollars in taxes with that IRA Roth conversion. So there's a lot of tools. There's a lot of ways to use this. It's 1031 applicable. And I'll use an example. I grew up in farming country. And so I'd stand there as a kid, 17, 18 years old, filling up diesel, getting chemicals. And I'd listen to the wealthy farmer that had 1,000 acres and the guy over here that had 100 acres. And he would spend all this time telling the guy with 100 acres how to farm and the chemicals to use and stuff. So one day, being who I am, I walked over to the guy that had the big acres. I said, why do you help the guy with 100 acres? You know, he can't pay his bills. He's basically going broke. And I didn't say it disrespectfully like that. I'm just paraphrasing. And he goes, I need him to be part of this co-op so I get all my stuff cheaper. I need him to stay in business. And at one time, when he sells, he's going to sell it to me because I've been so nice to him. So there was a game involved, right? Well, the point I'm making is that when you think about your farm or your ranch, maybe you own 3,000 acres. Well, you might want to sell 500 acres. Take that 1031, put it in minerals, because maybe that cash flow and that future value of those minerals will yield a much higher return than the 500 acres worth in crops or cattle or ranching. And that gives you a chance to de-risk your operations relative to having a successful and sensible alternative. And that's what a lot of our farmers and ranchers are doing. They're just trading land for minerals and doing it in a way that allows them to balance their overall lifestyle and their future inheritance to their family and kids.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Aaron, did you have a question? I see you've unmuted. Go ahead if you do. And anybody else, you can raise your virtual hand. We'll either unmute.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was wondering, do you get like a deed to that mineral rights or what shows that you own that?
I just write it on a napkin until it's yours and you just keep that napkin in your files. I'm kidding you. So what we do is because Eckerd buys the minerals, they're in our name. We don't transfer it to the individual buyer because when I take 500 acres and we put in a $10 million portfolio, if you put $100,000 in, you're getting a piece of all the mineral tracts. If I were to sign that out to you, Exxon, Chevron, Occidental Petroleum is going to get this deed for 1/10 of 1 acre or 1/4 of 5 acres. And all of a sudden you get your revenue check and the oil has a different decimal than the gas. You're going like, that's not right. Good luck calling them and getting them to correct it. So I have a full-time staff of landmen. I've got two lawyers on staff, and their job every day is to make sure our title is correct, make sure our revenue is correct. We have all kinds of revenue staff. And in our purchase sale agreement, when you invest with us, you have a purchase sale agreement that says, here's the exhibit of all the minerals that you own, your fractional share. In there, it says, we're managing it for you. So I drop dead. I go bankrupt. It's yours. You go to the court and say, they're my minerals. He was just managing it for me. But more importantly is if you get tired of my ugly face and voice after 6 months, you go, I don't like Troy. He's a jerk. Well, assign my minerals out. We're going to sign them out to you. That oil company is going to recognize your new owner, and they're going to send your checks directly to you. But then you got to figure out everything else goes on. So we're offering this service for free by holding the title. The other reason is, candidly, I like to hold title is I don't want you going out there selling your minerals for half price. See, collectively as mineral owners, we're like in a condo association. The lowest seller sets the market for everybody else. I want to make sure that if anybody wants to sell low, 1,500 of my partners in Troy Eckert are going to buy it for the value we think it's worth, because it preserves the value. It allows us to accumulate a limited resource, and that's kind of how we do it.
Okay, so that leads into my next question. So you can't leverage or borrow against that then?
No, sir. It's cash only. Right now, the biggest advantage we have is that nobody can borrow money on minerals. The banks have cut them off. As liquidity dries up, the first thing the bank said is every line of credit, anything doing with anything risky, get rid of it. So about a year ago, all of our competitors in minerals went away. The reason we don't do that is because when you go out and borrow money on your minerals, they're going to lend you the money based on the reserves and that cash flow. Remember that petroleum engineer value? They're not going to give you market value. So let's say I got $1 million in minerals. They're going to lend me money at about $550,000. And then they're going to say, by the way, we're only going to lend you $150,000 because we need you to have a 60% equity position and we want 95% of your revenue. Wait a minute. I got $1 million. You give me $550,000. You're going to lend me $150,000. You want 90% of my revenue. Yeah, I don't think so. The mafia would be a lot easier to work with. So one of the things about borrowing is that constantly your cash flow and your reserves change the terms of your agreement. And what I'm telling you, this is the cash asset, because the only two ways I know is cash flow. And if I need to get some freed up cash, I'll just go sell it. But this is pure cash investment. But I think the yield every single month and annually warrants that cash investment, because I don't know where else I can make 12 to 25, 30% return on my money. And that's what we're going to need the next 3 years as inflation goes into double digits.
Yeah. Any other questions for Troy?
And I'm always this hyper. This is natural. No drugs, no cocaine. I live like this every day. It's just, this is how I grew up. I was the best cotton picker anybody ever put in the field. I could outsack anybody else by hand. Trust me.
Yeah. So,
Don, I kind of missed a lot of the presentation, so I apologize for that. But so basically, it sounds like you when you put an investment with you, you become a partner. I would become a partner in your organization, basically.
No, sir. You own real estate. So each purchase sale agreement says, let's take the portfolio we just closed. It was a $31 million mineral package in the West Texas Permian Basin, had 1,000 wells. If you put in $310,000, you'd own 1%. You'd own 1% in all 1,000 wells, 1% in all the mineral tracts. But that purchase sale agreement says, it's real estate. Here's your exhibit. Here's all the fractional shares you own. You own it. You're only a partner, and I only refer to you as a partner because I hate the word investor. Investor means dumb mullet, right? Look it up in Webster's. I want to treat you as a partner because at some point in time, your interest aligned with my interest, we should have the same aligned interest. More importantly is, as a partner, you're not forced to stay working with me. You can separate anytime you want. Whereas if you're in a joint venture LLC, you're stuck. You can't do a 1031 exchange into an LLC. It's limitations on self-directed IRA. So I structured it so that way we're doing business together. You're investing, I'm managing, because we like each other, we want it to work. But you also can list that on your personal financial statement as true real estate, or otherwise you got to list it as an LLC member interest, which is not worth very much money. So we do it as direct ownership. I've got about five more minutes and I've got to scoot out for another appointment, but I don't want to cut it short. I'm always available. Jared will tell you, I pretty much get up at 5:30 and I'm up till midnight. I always like answering my cell phone. So I'm going to give you my cell phone. I'll put it in the chat. It's 469. It is 469-422-1781. And like I said, I'm pretty much answering the phone 24/7. My email address is my company, which is EckertEnterprises.com. Every one of you, whether you invest or not, that's up to you, but you should go to Eckerd Insights, sign up as a potential partner just because it allows you to access all the data. And there's hundreds of videos and educational information on mineral rights, how it works, how royalties work, percentages. I spent the last 5 years building up this huge library to make you the smartest, most educated investors on the planet. Because why? It's your assets. It's your money. Whatever you invest, whatever you sell, somebody approaches about your minerals, you need to know what you're doing. This is about learning this asset class inside and out, because it can be one you lose a lot of money if you make a mistake, or you can make a lot of money because you know about it. So I would encourage you to at least sign up to Eckerd Insights. You can text me on my cell phone. I get about 100 plus texts a day. I talk to every partner before I go to bed. I love what I do. My two son-in-laws run the company. My son is a petroleum engineer. It's a family-run energy business. And if I drop dead or have a heart attack, other than my pretty face, business doesn't stop. They know exactly what to do. So I have become just the antiquated spokesperson, but they do most of the work at this point. And that's kind of weird for me, but it's also kind of a blessing that I'm not having to pull the train by myself.
Yeah.
Any other questions before I have to sign off?
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and type that number in the chat.
I did type it in there. Did it not show up?
Oh, maybe hit send or something. I didn't see it on my end.
Okay, I'll do it one more time.
Yeah, we'll try that again. But yeah, we appreciate you being on, answering these questions, and being part of this. I feel like this is a good fit for many people, especially high net worth individuals who are looking to diversify into something that will produce consistent cash flow. This has really worked well for us. And okay, maybe just give it to us again if it's not.
No, it's okay. Daniel had captured me. It was going directly to Daniel. He wasn't sharing. So I was able to correct that, send it to everyone. It should have popped up.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Okay.
Number short, though.
Daniel was being greedy. So therefore, he's got to buy in the next portfolio. That's just saying that.
All right. Try giving that number again, and we'll type it in here because it's one number short.
469-422-1781. And I'll say one last thing before I go. I don't trust anybody. I grew up, my parents were broke. I had more money in my pocket when I was 17 than my parents had in their bank account. I used to lend my mother money. I used to break horses to be able to pay for my own competing horse. I used to buy cattle at the auction. I'd buy the skinny calf, take it home for 3 weeks, fatten it up, take it back. And so I've been an entrepreneur since I was 10. My dad always told me, your handshake's better than a contract. Your word's more important than anything you do in life. I named the company Eckerd, not because of ego, because my dad adopted me and my three sisters when I was 4 years old. And out of respect for him, I named the company after my dad. And the reason I'm telling you all this is I'm incredibly confident. I'm extremely knowledgeable. I'm an expert in my space. It's not arrogance. But if you're going to lead somebody through tough economic times, you're going to ask somebody to put their family's money, their inheritance, retirement with you. You better be a man of character. You better have a man of vision. You better be able to back it. You better have a backbone, which is missing in this world today from most business and most men. And that's who I am. I, if there's a fight, I'm the first one to swing. If there is an opportunity to protect my clients, I'm like a pit bull. I'm not going to back down. I'm going to be very much a listener, but I'm also going to tell you this is the way we go if it's the right way. So you'll get to know me over time, and I'm not somebody you have to guess what's on his mind. I've got Tourette syndrome. I've had it since I was a baby. I say what's on my mind, then I apologize if it's wrong, but you're going to know exactly where I stand in life. And I hope some of you decide to become partners. We have our annual conference next May in the Bahamas. 300 of our partners and their spouses are coming down. We have Mark Mills. We got some premium economists coming down. We'll talk about real estate, debt, political. If you become a partner, you're more than welcome to come to that conference. My belief is that we should be transparent and make all partners accessible one another. Because once you know me and once you know the partners, this is the environment you want to be a part of. I can assure you of that.
Well, that's great. Well, that's really good. We're going to be doing a summit in January. The focus of this summit is on building legacy. Last time we talked more about profitability, The cash flow. This next one, we're going to focus more on legacy. So this message fits really well with what we're going to be talking about there. Like we'll have Chris Miles, a few other folks talking about opportunities to be able to create passive income, to create a legacy. And I think this is a big part of it. So this has been the Profitable Regeneration podcast. You can look for it on podcast channels. Look for it on YouTube. The Profitable Steward, I think, is what it's called on YouTube. And Troy, thank you very much. And we sure hope you have a blessed day.
You guys have a great Thanksgiving and happy holidays and best of safety to you and your families. And God bless everyone. Thanks again, Jared. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us on the Profitable Steward podcast. Want to learn more about making your enterprise more profitable? Check out Ag Steward on our website, www.agsteward.fyi. Here at Ag Steward, we're working hard to make sure you have the latest tools and knowledge from the field of regenerative agriculture. Subscribe to our podcast to keep up with the latest info and help us spread the word by giving this video a thumbs up, sharing this information with other farmers, and as always, please join the conversation by leaving us a rating and a review so we can help you to keep growing strong.